Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How we doing?
We're very good.
Joe, are you back? Are you home?
He's back.
I am. I'm back.
Welcome home. It's been 84 years.
It's been a long time.
It does feel that way. I'm right back in time for a tornado.
Well, potentially. We'll see what happens.
What a nice welcome home. You missed all the beautiful 75 and sunny degree weather.
That's what I hear.
You did. So, Caroline, we were just discussing your Tigers last night. Not quite enough for Caitlin Clark. What did you make of that game and what last night meant for women's basketball?
Well, overall, it was just a great game. And I think overall, every storyline, at least on the court, because there's a whole lot of storylines off the court that have just become, frankly, exhausting. But I think it delivered in every single facet that you got the Caitlin Clark aspect, 9 threes tying a tournament record. You had Caitlin Clark dropping 41 points. You had Angel Reese and her dominant presence in the paint. It was just kind of like everything that you wanted from this game, competitive and back and forth. You got that. And I think overall for women's basketball, you know, looking at my Twitter, you couldn't find a tweet that wasn't LSU and Iowa related. And that's new in women's basketball, frankly, when you have everyone across the country, sports fans across the country, completely engaged in a big time heavyweight Elite Eight matchup. That's frankly something that I have to give Dawn Staley a lot of credit for, Kim Mulkey a lot of credit for, Lisa Bluter at Iowa a lot of credit for, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all of these characters that have kind of broken down this barrier to entry into the sport of women's college basketball and have made it truly a spectacle. It's a testament to the players, and it's a testament to the work that the coaches have done and all the players before the players that are playing now have done. So I think it was a good night for women's college basketball. I'm just ready for narratives that are a little bit more satiating than good versus evil or good versus bad or, you know, this yin and yang fake division, lazy attempt at trying to create narratives. Like, I'm ready to graduate past that because, yes, it's a good story. And yes, I think as sports fans and just as humans, we want to compartmentalize things as good and bad. And we have that. And that's kind of the narrative between Iowa and LSU. Caitlin Clark, good. Angel Reese, bad. Even beyond that, Dawn Staley, good. Kim Mulkey, bad. I think it's good for narrative creation, but now that we have this newfound fan base in women's college basketball, like I'm ready for something a little bit more than that, a little bit more complex than that. Like we can do more than just one side good, other side bad.
Well, I totally agree with that. And some of that is the Ben Bolch, which I'm glad he apologized, ridiculous column he wrote in the LA Times.
It's like, just disgusting.
And look, I mean, I mean, honestly, I didn't know like that was like apparently a porn franchise, what he referenced. But he says he
didn't
do
that
it.
Either.
I guess
can
I
you say porn at 7:06 a.m.?
I think so.
Okay.
It exists in the world. We can't like play it, you know?
Yes, thankfully we cannot.
But I mean, that was, and I agree, like there is too much of that. I mean, I do think like there's nuance. Like, I mean, frankly, I like how Dawn Staley handles things way better than I like how Kim Mulkey handles things. But
that's fine.
But you're right. The good, evil, it's way, way out of bounds with some of this crap. I mean, Angel Reese last night, if anybody saw her presser, and this is, I mean, it's the big picture of that is like social media is just such garbage, you know?
It's a soul-sucking place.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're her, the crap, that she, imagine the crap. I mean, just imagine since last year and that. Todd again. I thought it was great. They had an amazing game, and also I thought they had great sportsmanship last night. Like it was. I'm really glad that they got to play again. I do want to, on this whole point though, ask you, what did you think of the Washington Post story on Kim Mulkey?
It was obviously definitely not as damning as Kim Mulkey made it out to be. She called it a hit piece.
Right. She had no idea.
And maybe based off of the questions that he was asking her, or, you know, voicemails or messages that I'm sure that he did leave her over these last 2 years, I'm sure she did kind of assume the worst. What I wish the Washington Post article would have done was focus more in on the complexities of Kim Mulkey as a person, rather than trying to label her or pin her down as racist or homophobic. I felt like the piece kept trying to be like a gotcha kind of situation where, like, frankly, I didn't know about the relationship between Kim Mulkey and her father. I think that is a really good peek behind the curtain as to what kind of person she is, or maybe the background of how she became who she is. And for those who didn't read it, she found out that her dad cheated on her mom, and the day that she found out, she hasn't talked to him ever again. Like, I think that's a really interesting story, you know, the coming of age story of Kim Mulkey. I wanted to hear a little bit more about, you know, her time at Baylor and how she, maybe it was labeling her as homophobic because she felt like, hey, maybe be who you want to be in here and don't be so, I don't know the right word to use, but basically, like with Brittany Griner, she was like, look, it's hard to be in Baylor in a Baptist town and frankly, and be black and gay. I mean, that's just, that is what it is. Maybe you could look at that and say that Kim Mulkey's a terrible person, or maybe you could look at it through the lens of Kim Mulkey was just trying to protect her players in a place that's not very accepting. And frankly, in a time that wasn't nearly as accepting as it is now. I would have liked to have peeled back the layers a little bit, talk about how complex she is as a person rather than trying for it to be such a gotcha story.
Well,
because there's a lot that I don't know about Kim Mulkey.
Yeah. I mean, I think I hear what you're saying, but that's the thing. If she talks to him, I promise you that's where the layers get peeled back more, right? Like, I think she was really upset that he contacted her family, but I mean, we could go back and forth on this. I hear what you're saying. I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff in there that wasn't gotcha too, but anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
What do you make of Kelly Harper being fired and where the Lady Vols go from here, trying to get back to national prominence, which, quite frankly, Caroline, is a place they haven't been in more than a decade now?
Yeah, I was surprised that they made the move now. But I think that it's a message from Danny White that, look, the standard hasn't been met, and it hasn't been met since Kelly Harper took over. And why waste any time? And it's not just about the result. I think it's also about the future, that the recruiting classes are not up to par with some other top programs in the country, or frankly, even within the conference, that they haven't been cleaning up in the transfer portal nearly as well as maybe some other teams in the country and in the conference, that it's not just the result now. It's also the, what's the reason for optimism moving forward? That you have one of the best players in the country in Rekia Jackson. She's going to be a top three, top five pick in the WNBA draft. And all you could muster up was the Sweet 16. So I understand it. And it's a message from Danny White that, look, men's basketball is one of the best programs in the country. Tony Vitello, in what he's been there for 4 years, this is his fourth, fifth season, he has put Tennessee baseball on the map. Tennessee baseball really hadn't been relevant since the Todd Helton years, and Tony Vitello has now become a frequent flyer to Omaha. So I think that that's Danny White's way of saying, look, we have all these other coaches and other programs, and the expectation is high. We have other coaches and other programs that have been able to put us on the map, and you coach for a brand that is already established in this sport, and you haven't been able to make it to the Elite Eight in 5 years. Like, we have to go find the best coach available. And I think about what comes next. You know, Willie asked me yesterday, is it time that they kind of go outside of the circle, go outside of the Pat Summit circle of trust? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Just go find the best coach available. If that coach has Pat Summit ties, then great. That's a wonderful story for that coach and the ties to this program. If that coach doesn't have Pat Summit ties, then that's fine. That's just the best coach right now for what this program needs, because the SEC is only getting more competitive. LSU and South Carolina and frankly Ole Miss and what Shea Ralph is doing at Vanderbilt, they're not going away anytime soon.
Well, let's keep it to hoops. What about Tennessee?
Joe is salivating.
Yeah,
right now.
This is my kind of segment right here.
I hope he enjoys it because we got about a week left until next March.
Yeah. What did you think of the Tennessee Purdue game? What's your prevailing takeaway, Caroline?
My prevailing takeaway is that, look, it was a tough game against a really good team, against the best player in the country. I do think that the officiating was frustrating, and I know that, Joe, you refused to acknowledge that. I was frustrated by the officiating, and you can blame the officiating all you want. Overall, that's not why Tennessee lost the game. Tennessee lost the game because it was the Dalton Connect show and nobody else decided to show up. That Jonas Adu, you know, couldn't hit a rim if it hit him in the face. That Zakai Ziegler, frankly, wasn't good enough offensively. That Josiah Jordan-James had a solid first half, but in the second half just completely fell flat. That if Tennessee wanted to beat Purdue, a one seed, one of the best teams in the country with the best player in the country, it was going to have to be more than just Dalton Connect. Even though Dalton Connect had 37 points, they still had plenty of wide open looks that just fell flat. Like, I know in first half, Santiago Vescovi had a wide open three and he just hit the rim. There were a couple of Dalton Connect wide open threes that he just didn't make. So overall, we weren't good enough outside of Dalton Connect, and you can't beat really good teams if you only have one player that shows up.
Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us. And I and George, you're welcome back to Rex Road today. Good stuff. Good to have Rex Road back in the building and Caroline throwing shade at him. It's good stuff.
That's what I'm used to.
If you want to say that a whistle whenever a player just simply brushes up against Zach Edey is annoying and frustrating, you can say that.
Yeah, that you can. I got a lot to say about this whole thing. Not really the officiating stuff, but let me promise you, I will say, like, I'm going to pull the rank of I was 10 feet away from this. Like, I was right there watching.
Here we go.
But that does probably give you a little bit better view, right? Like, I was right there. Dude, Tennessee fouled him 30 more times than they were called for fouling. Because you have to. Like, they fouled the crap out of him all day just to try to not let him stand under the basket.
You can call a holding on every single play, too.
Yes, but if you're blocking a 400-pound, incredibly athletic D-tackle, you're going to have to hold that guy every play, right? And that's what Edie is in basketball. I mean, I get it's frustrating, but, I mean, you got to keep that in mind.
I think that it's the problem for me is the consistency.
But there's no getting
the benefit of the doubt of a whistle.
I get you.
That Tennessee wasn't getting.
Right. People bounce off the dude and his elbows are at their head from the start. So it's like Shaq. It's very much reminds me of Shaq, where it's like, you know, no one else is nearly as strong or big as him. And so it looks like he's fouling people all the time, but he's just like moving.
Joe Rexroad.
Just massive.
A Zach Edey Bobo. We figured that out here on the program.
Edey Bobo.
That's my guy.
A Boilermaker Bobo.
Yeah. Oh, that's even better.
Boiler Bobo. Hey, I want DJ.
Boiler Bobo.
I hope DJ Burns puts 40 on him Saturday.
I hope so too. We'll see what happens.
I hope so too. Man, and I hope that DJ Burns is playing right tackle for the Tennessee Titans in 2024.
That'd be awesome. Caroline, great stuff. We'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
All right. Appreciate y'all.
Caroline Fenton joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock here on the program. We'll react to what she had to say coming up next. Get into the Titans. It is draft months. And we got some draft takes that we need to get to coming up next. We'll do that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Appreciate Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean at 8 o'clock. Adam Vingan at 8:30, going through all things Nashville Predators and some potential playoff matchups as well. So looking forward to all that. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our number. Joe, it is draft month. We've made it. It is April the 2nd, and later this month, the 2024 NFL Draft will be taking place. Lots of conversations, lots of mock drafts are going to take place between now and then. There's the Joe Alt conversation of could he really get in there at number 5 overall with the Chargers and throw the draft off and not go wide receiver but go offensive line, and how would that affect the Titans and their draft strategy if that's the way things go there? Which teams could be interested in moving up for a quarterback? Does that happen before the Titans pick at number 7? There's a lot of different ways this thing could go as it relates to draft day. One thing, and we talked about this yesterday with Corey Curtis, they're going to take a left tackle. either in the first or second round. Like, I would just be stunned if they didn't. We brought up the possibility yesterday, like, could you go left tackle and then right tackle and really just a totally buy in on addressing your offensive line in the first two rounds and trying to do everything you could possibly do to keep your quarterback upright. So let's say they did that. They went left tackle and right tackle in the first two rounds. That means in one offseason you would have addressed left and right tackle in free agency, center up the middle. You had a left guard that you took last year at number 11 overall in the first round. That's significant investment in your offensive line at that point. We had some people weigh in yesterday that say, yep, that's exactly what they want to see the Titans do. They had some people weigh in and say, if they don't take another wide receiver at some point in the draft, I'm going to lose my mind. So where do you come down on the options for the Titans in the draft here? And how much, and we know best player on the board is going to be the thing, but how much, if you're Denard Wilson, are you looking around saying, hey, guys, please give me a pass rusher on the other side of the ball? Because that's the other part of this that you got to factor into it as well.
Yeah. Well, certainly I think Denard Wilson got to be hoping that this draft provides some help of some kind to him, and probably in that area in particular. So, you know, there's momentum on the Dallas Turner front. Hey, I don't know. I don't know how good he is. I know he's the highest rated edge in this class, but how good is he? Because if he's going to be a game wrecker in the NFL, consistent game wrecker, then, and he's sitting there, then you would have to have that factored in.
Sure.
You know, I'm not, if you believe that, if he's that good, if it's no reach whatsoever at seven, and I'm not convinced that it isn't a reach, but I'm just saying, if that's what your evaluation comes away with, then okay. I mean, if you can get a great player there, think of what that would do. I mean, this defense needs, you know, they obviously have highly paid difference makers in some key spots. They have Landry, they have Simmons, now they have Snead, they have Awuzie also, they have Hooker, you know, all to varying degrees, guys who have been paid on second deals, you know, you expect them to make a difference. You need some rookie contract people who are good players. I mean, you have Roger McCreary, right?
Yep.
Like, that's it. Like,
yep.
You have Roger McCreary as the young player on the rookie deal, prominent pick, who is a difference maker for your defense. One of those is bad. So, yeah, look, I mean, I'm definitely in the camp of, if you think Joe Alt is that guy and you have a chance to pick Joe Alt and no one's trying to get into that spot and you're just picking at seven, I think you have to do it. Unless you're like, well, we like Joe Alt a lot. We have him the highest rated, but we have this guy, not too far behind him. We think we can get one of those guys. Dallas Turner is the top guy on the board. Okay, do it. And then, you know, there's also all these other iterations. I mean, is J.J. McCarthy actually going as high as some people think? You know, if that's the case, I mean, is Harbaugh not bluffing and is actually going to take another offensive tackle to go with Slater? You know, I mean, maybe. And then all of a sudden you could be looking at one of those receivers. If that's the highest guy on your board, okay. Then Denard Wilson, you know, sadly looks away and says, now they're going to draft the tackle next. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And now they're drafting the tackle next. So, great. See you in the fourth round, everybody.
That's right. Do you buy the J.C. Latham hype that, I mean, there's a lot of talk about him maybe moving up the draft boards here and what that could mean, whether that's the Titans or elsewhere. But just in terms of his movement in the draft, where he could go, and the idea of, like, is he left tackle? Is he right tackle? Like,
that's
where is he going
thing.
To play?
Yeah, that's a big thing. Obviously, yeah, people love him, but can he play left tackle in the NFL? Because Joe Alt is a left tackle. And obviously, there's plenty of guys who play left tackle in college who, you know, project differently. Look, I thought Jack Conklin was going to be a left tackle in the NFL. Turns out right tackle was right for him.
Yep.
I mean, the Titans were right. And Dylan Raidens was a left tackle in college. I mean, he did play a little left tackle for the Titans.
He did.
A dominant performance against the Niners. Dominant! No. But –
Nick Bosa is still shaking in his boots when he thinks about Dylan Raidens.
So glad he doesn't have to face him anymore. But is J.C. Latham, is he a guy who you feel good as you evaluate him, Bill Callahan and all those guys, and Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon, you know, he can be a left tackle. You do need a right tackle, but I just think you have to. I understand how the game is today, and you got great players that line up on both sides and move around, but the blind side of the quarterback is still the blind side of the quarterback if you have a right-handed quarterback, right? So
yes.
I just think whoever you take, if you take someone in that first round, I feel like you got to take them because they're going to be your left tackle.
I think so, too. I think that's clearly got to be the priority. And the other reason for that, Joe, is not that you have, in my opinion, great options that can play right tackle, but you do have, like, some options that can play right tackle. Who you got on this roster right now that can play left tackle? I mean, you could throw Jalen Duncan out there, see how that went.
Yeah.
You could throw Dylan Radins out there, but that's probably not a good idea.
Nicholas Petitfrère.
You could throw him out there, but I think he's probably better suited on the right.
Again, another, you know, college left tackle at a high level, but yeah. Right. So, exactly. There are guys who, between them, I'm sure if you could, like, combine all their strengths and you'd feel great about it, right? But you may be able to find a right tackle. I'm absolutely in agreement with anybody who says they need to go get a right tackle, too. But I just think that the priority when you draft tackle has to be left tackle. So is Latham, and maybe he can. Maybe they believe that he can do that. But I just know that Joe Alt is a left tackle and will be a left tackle.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the draft? What should the Titans do with their first two picks? Would you consider going left tackle and right tackle in the first and second rounds back-to-back? We'll take your thoughts on all that. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see Tom Segura at Bridgestone Arena coming up on April the 12th. Be caller 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Tom Segura at Bridgestone Arena coming up on April the 12th. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Joe, the draft going to be a really interesting time here for the Titans because we talked about it after free agency. You did so much in free agency, certainly to address your back end at corner. Obviously, Ridley coming in at wide receiver. You've done things on the offensive side of the ball with Pollard coming in to add to the skill position group as well. There's a lot that's happened this offseason in free agency for the Titans. If you hit on left tackle, and whether it's Joe Alt or anyone else, if you hit on left tackle, I mean, it's a heck of an offseason. And, like, if you're Will Levis, like, the difference that you're going to feel if you hit at left tackle – but behind this offensive line as compared to what you were behind a year ago has got to be night and day. And look, to his credit, I thought he did a really good job last year of showing toughness, maybe a little bit too much toughness at sometimes, or you'd like to see him bail out or get down, and he's got to work on that moving forward here. But, you know, the revolving door that they had at left and right tackle last year and just the disaster that it was in protection for the Titans – if you can find a way to get that in one offseason, where maybe it's not a total strength for your team yet, but it's not a complete liability either, that's a big deal for Will Levis and his development here. So it's a crucial pick, whoever it is, whether it's Joe Alt or elsewhere, when you select this left tackle, it's about time the Titans hit on a freaking tackle in the draft. And I realize this is a different regime and all those things, but it's about time the Titans hit on a tackle in the draft. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's amazing the struggles they've had. You know, you talk a first, second, and third. A first, second, and third since 2020. And Isaiah Wilson, Dylan Radins, Nicholas Petitfrère. You know, two of them are on your roster still, but we're sitting here debating, you know, is Radins, you know, is he going to be a backup guard, backup right tackle?
Yeah.
Petitfrère, is he any good? Was last year a blip? Yeah, what is he? So, obviously, those are better outcomes than Isaiah Wilson. But together, first, second, third round tackle, and you have no starting tackles among those tackles.
My goodness.
Good. That's devastating. It's not as devastating as A.J. Brown trade, but it goes right along with the whole trend of where how this roster got where it is. So, it is critical. We still don't know what Peter Skoronski is. I mean, I think he's going to be good. I think you saw enough last year to think he's going to be good. I think that having good people around him would make a big difference. So there's also why, you know, getting the right tackle, the right left tackle. What does that mean to Skaronski? What does Cushenberry mean on the other side? You know, I mean, I think you could end up liking that pick in the long run, but I don't know yet. And I do know that, you know, this tackle who we presume that they're going to take is going to be immediately starting, and it's probably unfair for like a rookie to come in and just, okay, play at a Pro Bowl level out there. But you know, they did get that with Jack Conklin, the last drafted tackle that worked out for them 8 years ago, and they've got to hit like that again.
I got a text that says, it's not a good idea, in my opinion, to go left and right tackle. Get your left tackle, pass rush, or high-level coverage linebacker to complement Murray. Right tackle needs to be addressed later, or have Bill Callahan coach up one of the slew of linemen into that position. This from an unnamed texter on the text line. Matt from Paris says, trade with the Vikings. Fashanu or Alt will still be available. I keep saying Fashanu. It's Fashanu.
Fashanu.
Take Chop Robinson at 23. It's from Matt from Paris.
Okay.
TD loves Chop Robinson.
I like Chop Robinson, too. I like Chop Robinson. He's a good player. Yeah, to me, we've talked about the D tackles. I mean, they need another guy in the interior to me who, again, is another young, difference-making player on a rookie deal. So any of those guys, you know, Fisk or, you know, Sweat or whoever, I wouldn't hate that with the second pick. If it got to that after taking the tackle, Chop Robinson, it just feels like he's in that area of, you know, you're not, that's a reach.
Yeah.
Based on the evaluation of him high. And I don't think he's going to get to you at 38. So you'd have
to trade back.
Yeah. You'd have to be in a different spot in the draft for him. But if you're going to take an edge, well, hey, you could take the best edge. It's just, is it any kind of reach at all?
Well, and a lot of this comes back down to, I think, a really interesting philosophical debate. If you're a Titans fan, or if you're somebody evaluating the draft, yet, like, which would you rather have? Would you rather have more picks in the draft, particularly more high picks, or would you rather hang around at number 7 and take what is presumed to be an elite player? Right? Like, would you rather trade back from 7? To like 11 or 12 and get a couple of shots either in the first round or a first and a couple of seconds, maybe get back into the third round somehow. Like, would you rather take more kicks at the can, or would you rather hang around at 7 and try to get an elite guy? Like, to me, some of it depends on who's there, but I think in this particular draft, it'd take a lot personally to get me to move out of 7. I just think you're not in this situation a ton where you've got potentially the best left tackle available to you to take at number 7. If he's not there, and let's say the Titans have the same evaluation of as Alt as a lot of people do, and that is he's the best left tackle in the draft, and he gets taken. Well, then you also have the opportunity for an Adunze or a Neighbors or whatever receiver ends up there. Like, Bowers is going to be sitting there. So that's a long way of me saying, Joe, it would take a whole lot to get me to trade out of number 7. And I just don't know that a team is going to approach you with what I would consider to be enough to do that.
Yeah, like, I'm team elite player for sure. But the answer there, too, is also like, if that's how they evaluate it. Maybe they think there's 4 elite players in the draft. And it's like, yeah, Alt is the best of those guys, but Alt to down to number 7 guy, it's actually not a huge gap. Okay, well, if that's their evaluation, then – and you have an opportunity, then do it, you know? It's just, I mean, it seems to me, based on, you know, the draft analysts and everything, that there's a little bit of a gap after him, you know? And so if the Titans think that, then yeah. And you actually think he's an elite player, yeah. I mean, some drafts you have 5, some drafts you have 15 or 20 people, however you want to exactly define elite player, you know? And it's just so much about, it is need. You have to factor in need. And then it's like, how many players at that particular position are we comfortable? Like, how much of a drop-off is it if you take a player at that spot with the next pick?
Well, and the other interesting part, too, is like, I think people have kind of left this discussion on the back burner because they signed Ridley. But I still wonder, like, if you're Rand Carthon and all your information tells you that, let's say you got your pick between, I don't know, the draft goes weird and four quarterbacks get taken in front of you and somebody, like, falls in love with Brock Bowers or something, and you've got Alt sitting there and you've got, like, a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze sitting there. If your board tells you that a Dunze is, like, the best player, and don't you take him, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, I think so.
I think people have totally discounted that because they've signed Ridley and they've addressed wide receiver. But, like, I mean, to me, they're not done addressing wide receiver one way or the other. And I do what, like, you know, Brian Callahan said it, and it is a different situation than it is in Cincinnati. But he likes people who could score touchdowns. I do wonder if they get to a point where they look at seven and there's an option there that's a skill player that they just absolutely love, will they do it?
Yeah. And they want to win this year, and they're obviously they're making some moves that are, you know, some highly paid veterans on the field this year with the idea of winning football games. But you are still, like, the roster is not completely fixed this offseason. No way. So, yeah, you can get a great player that for years is going to be a great player, and that's your best guy. Do it. The argument against it, more than, like, this year's competitiveness, is just the Will Levis being correct. Safe factor, right? That's, like, how much urgency is there? Like, that has to be shored up, and then everything else off that can work, but you have to shore it up, give the kid a chance. I mean, it's
worth discussing.
Yeah. But that's where also that's like, yes, but we can get this guy 30, whatever. Patrick Paul is right. A guy a lot of people think is a higher, you know, second round guy. Well, we love Patrick Paul. Okay. I mean, you know, that's where you get into all those different scenarios. But I do think that the priority of protecting him has to be very high.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. We'll get to that next. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 4-team bracket to compete to win prizes, including tickets to see Creed at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on August 13th. Friend of the show, Creed, playing at Ascend Amphitheater on August 13th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Since the driving cat.
Toonsis, the cat who could drive a car.
Honey, you won't believe it. Toonsis can drive a car.
Toonsis is our cat?
Yeah, come on, I'll show you.
Toonsis, look out!
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad. Back in person, live from the studio, the floor is yours for the rant today.
Yeah, today is about Jared Stillman, who I think has hit a new low. I just want to say the Toonses comparison is like, yeah, he's making good points. Then, you know, it's kind of like good NFL talk. And then the cap's like, you know, you go, this one, he started the car and he just drove it directly over the cliff. Let's go to Jared opening his show yesterday. This is Jared's open. Some nice highlights of Jared's open yesterday.
I'm sure there was a lot of, it was a great game and it sucked that one team had to lose. And that's the difference between Purdue and Tennessee is just a little bit. And Zach Edey is so great and Purdue, bullcrap. We're not doing that today. It was an 11-point lead, now it's a 5-point lead, but we're okay. But not this stubborn old pop-pop on the sideline. I got no sympathy for Barnes today, by the way. None. A 9-minute run. At some time, the coach has to put his foot down, call time. He's got to do something. But not Rick Barnes. Dalton Connect, I'm sorry. He missed too many shots. He missed too many open looks. You know, again, 6-for-12 from three. Put a couple of more of those in there, and those were some clean looks he got. Make a couple more of those, and you win. 14 of 31. Make a couple more of those, and you win.
And there's so much more. Like, he later went back to it. I don't really have time even to get into all of the awful takes that Jared had. But a couple key points there. First of all, he started right out with, you know, actually, before he's like, well, I didn't listen to Robbie and Joe, but I'm sure I read Joe's Cub. It was just, oh, great game, blah, 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 right? Okay. So what did Jared just tell us there? Like, what is Jared telling us with that?
My takeaways are that Rick Barnes cost him the game, not calling a timeout.
Right, but what Jared is telling us there is we're not doing that today. You know what that means? Let's not care about what happened. Let's manufacture some fake outrage. That's what he – like, I don't care what happened. I'm going to manufacture some fake outrage. Because if there's ever a time where it was like, well, it was a one seed favored in basically a home game against a two seed. It was an incredible game. And the one seed won in a close game. It was a great game. This would be the time. No. We're not doing that. Okay, fine. But if you're going to go after Rick Barnes and try to put this on him, you can't have the ridiculous fact errors that Jared had here. He said a 9-minute run.
He did.
A 9-minute run is what Jared said. First of all, let's quickly do the timeout thing. He is right that Rick Barnes is not a timeout guy. Now, he's wrong a little bit on the context, like he's on an island. Tom Izzo's the exact same way. They are let the team play through it, guys. Sometimes I think that's a mistake. Sometimes I think it's the right move. Some coaches are timeout, and then they just come right back out and keep getting their butt kicked. And then, you know, great, your timeouts are gone. SI actually did a story a few years ago on, like, the data on whether those work. And basically it's it's not conclusively effective. I do agree that Painter's timeout was effective in that run. They reset. They adjusted. Painter's timeout came with 5 minutes and 11 seconds left in the first half.
That is correct.
I don't think a 9-minute run's possible there, but it's way worse than that. Okay, so 5 minutes and 11 seconds left, which means, of course, it's a timeout for Tennessee too, right?
Correct.
Yes. So, I mean, timeouts to me, yeah, stop momentum, but also it's about making adjustments. I mean, like in the NBA, that's what it is. Like, okay, you're out. We're doing something different, right? Okay, so what happened then after the timeout? Foster Lawyer came right out, got to the rim. Tennessee made a mistake. You had three baskets, okay, from the Boilermakers. You had three baskets in a row from the Boilermakers, which is I believe is a 6-0 run, right?
That's correct. Am I right with that? Unless they hit a three, which they did not.
Right. So they got a 6-0 run, and then they get fouled. So Rick Barnes just had a timeout. Then there's a foul on Awaka on Edie, okay? So that's going to be an 8-0 run. That's the TV timeout. That TV timeout came with 3 minutes and 23 seconds left in the half.
Correct.
Can you do the math with me? Let's do the math together, Toonses. That is 1 minute and 48 seconds between timeouts. And Jared is screaming about a 9-minute run where Rick Barnes just didn't call a timeout. Are you freaking kidding me? Okay, so there's 8-0. There's 8 of the points. He comes back and hits the free throw. The rest of the half, in 3 minutes and 23 seconds of basketball, it's Purdue 7, Tennessee 2. Let's go to the play-by-play. Okay, so Edie scores. So you've got, first of all, Kinect gets stripped inside. He should have shot. He got stripped by Lawyer. Mayshak fell on Lawyer. So now 3:08 left. Lawyer 1-1. Okay, he hits him. There's 10-0. He kept playing the thing with the huge noise in the arena. Kinect misses a good three. It's a good shot. Edie scores inside on Adu. 12-0. It's been about 45 seconds since the timeout. Vescovy does a fantastic job forcing a jump ball. Then he has a wide open three. He misses it. Then Tennessee gets a great stop. James swats Lawyer at the rim. Ziegler's fouled. Has a 1-1. Misses it. Then Edie gets fouled and makes two free throws. There's 13-0. How could you not be stopped? Call the timeout. They're walking to the other end and shooting free throws. Your guys are making good plays and missing 1-1. Call timeout so Ziegler won't miss a front end of a 1-1. And then Kinnett gets a full court dunk, and then Edie gets a hook shot to fall, and it's halftime. It's a complete mischaracterization of what happened in the game. Complete fact error, absolutely inaccurate, completely botches the entire thing, and that's his opening of his show. He opens his show with this. And then keeps doubling down. He said 9-minute run like 4 times yesterday. It's a 1-minute and 48-second run, dude. It's awful. Awful commentary. I mean, I don't have time to get in all the other stuff. He said that also Barnes, he tried to pin this on Barnes. And Rick Barnes' March record is what it is, okay? When he retires, he's going to be a great regular season coach, consistent excellence, and he underperformed in March. There's no doubt. Also, last year he overachieved at Tennessee to get to the Sweet 16 without Ziegler. And this year he did not underachieve as a 2 seed, losing to a 1 seed in a fantastic game. He achieved, right?
Yes.
He is the winningest. He has 9 wins at Tennessee. He has 3 Sweet 16s. He has Elite 8. I agree. This team was good enough to be in the Final Four, and Vols fans should be hurting, and that sucks. But to try to blame this on Rick Barnes, this loss, is so comically stupid. And we haven't even got it. Like, the whole premise of the show is wrong, totally wrong. Then he gets into the strategy. He has a play for Josiah James that he drew up. No, it was a play for Kinnect. It got to James. He took a shot. He missed it. Wrong. His strategy was, you got to let nobody else do anything. So, in other words, don't do anything to Edie inside.
Just don't touch him.
Like his game plan that he should have had was, you just let Edie do whatever he wants, and then you don't let anybody else. They hit 3 threes, and Lawyer's the only guy in double figures. And they tell me, Robbie, what would have happened if they said, Zach, go ahead, buddy. You just single up and do whatever you want. Would they have ever not scored on a possession?
Probably not.
Like, take that to any basketball coach and tell me how hard they laugh at you.
You haven't got to my favorite part yet.
What's that?
Dalton Kinnect was 6 of 12 from 3 if he could have hit a few more threes. It's like, well, he shot 50% from 3, which is an absurdly good percentage there. But you're right, he did miss a couple. 6 of 12 from 3. Pretty good.
I mean, this is – I don't think that
it's better than Steph Curry's average. Just throwing it out there. 50% from 3 is pretty good.
Like, Jared went to Louisville, was on radio in a town where they talk college basketball, and he was a manager for a college basketball team. So I don't believe this. I don't believe that Jared is this completely clueless about basketball. I don't believe it. I think he just wanted to have an outrage show. Tell me I'm wrong.
I mean, maybe so.
I mean, I don't know. He needs to explain himself. But
a lot of people wondering if you're going to be okay on the text line.
I mean,
a lot of people concerned about
he
your health.
He said 9-minute run. Like, the Purdue timeout was with 5 minutes. So, like, correct. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that part doesn't make any sense. They did start off well in the second half, too. So, does he just mean, like, in totality, it wasn't the actual run, but what felt like the run from the late part of the second half to the early part of the second before Tennessee turned around?
He should have called a timeout at halftime. Timeout!
Hey! Can I get a timeout? We got 8 minutes left in the halftime break.
If you can find me any accounts of that game, any mention anywhere else, account, I mean, I don't know anyone who thought at any point, oh, yeah, that messed up the time. He played Barkley about the run. He's right. That run was huge in the game. But not one. If you can find an account or a mention or anyone else, any other human in the world who watched this game talking about the timeout there, that Rick Brown, please bring it to me. Please, and you know what? I'll be shocked at that person's ineptitude, too.
As the texter pointed out, you should save this for tomorrow. Kuharski would have been proud of the rant. He would have given you a standing ovation.
Can we just play this tomorrow?
Maybe.
Can we just replay this tomorrow?
Maybe so. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on the Vols, his thoughts on the draft coming up with the Titans as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.